You know, in today's world, it seems the best treatment is reserved only for a few. Well, Discover wants to change that by making everyone feel special. That's why with your Discover card, you have access to 24/7 live customer service as well as $0 fraud liability, which means you're never held responsible for unauthorized purchases. Finally, no matter who you are or where you are in life, you'll feel special with Discover. Learn more at discover.com/creditcard. Limitations apply.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Game time.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
It was so un-Ravens-like for this to happen. They abandoned the run.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Some of the SOL stuff happened. Same old lines. Take the points. Man, what a way for this season to end. Lions fans, I feel for you.
Earlier on the show, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer, 49ers reporter for The Athletic, David Lombardi. Coming up, NFL Network analyst Brian Baldinger. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
That's right, Baldy's coming up, and yeah. It's not me. Or you, Chris.
Yeah, thank you. Or Jay Felly.
Or Felly. Well, you wear a hat.
That's why.
Is that what?
Be proud, man. Be proud, bro.
He also wears a head. He also wears, you know, what do we get? A headset, ears? What do we call those?
Cans.
Oh,
for years at Fox, it would leave a crease on my head.
Yeah, it's not good. That's why I always told Matt Nagy when he was the head coach of the Bears, why are you wearing a visor?
Yeah.
Like, it just accentuates the baldness. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Never want to accent.
That was, listen, and we at RES Consulting, we can help with that stuff.
Brockman's bald head is shining like a full moon.
There you go. That's one of the greatest Eric Dickerson drops of all time.
That was one of our first weeks on the air.
Was that right?
Was it?
He was very early.
Yeah. And he was just overcoming a cold, so he had really deep voice.
extra Barry White.
At any rate. Hey, hour number three of our show. If you missed Albert Breer in hour one, and David Lombardi was terrific, the athletic reporter for the 49ers, talking about a 49ers season that has, in fact, culminated in the Super Bowl. If you missed any of that, hour number three, as soon as we're done, it re-airs this show on the Roku channel, channel 210. As soon as we are done, Susie Schuster, Amy Trask, What the Football, Hall of Famer Marshall Faulk will zoom into the show. That podcast will be available later on this day, and they'll set you up for Super Bowl 58 with Marshall's thoughts on Championship Sunday and how everything's going to go down on Super Bowl Sunday in Las Vegas, Nevada. Overreaction Monday. We just did Overreaction Monday on a Tuesday for this show. And then the podcast, Chris Brockman and I did that yesterday. That's available for wherever you get your podcasts as well. TJ Jefferson is chilling out in a coat and a hat. Honestly, you look like you're going out right now. Like if you walked in the door, I'd be like, where are you going?
You know, I wear a different jacket every single day.
Yeah, but this is different, though.
Not like that.
This is different.
That looks like
wool. I like it.
That looks warm.
And the hat matches one of the stripes in your jacket.
Of course it matches. What do you think? This didn't happen.
And what's the shirt? What's the shirt?
And the hat's
match. Oh, it's my favorite professional wrestler, Asuka.
Okay.
You know?
I don't know what that means.
What? Well, do you know what a professional wrestler is, Chris? And do you know what a favorite is? So
we saw her, right?
Your term's confused.
At WrestleMania?
WrestleMania.
Very good.
Women's Tag Team Champions, Kabuki Warriors. Just had Royal Rumble this weekend.
I know that, right?
Amazing.
Shout out Cody Rhodes.
I saw my Twitter feed that Cody is favored to take down Roman Reigns now. Is that true?
You know, just like last year, I'm not sure if that's going to happen.
Roman's been champ for like 38 years.
That was the fight we saw that night, too.
Yeah. Me and Feller went to WrestleMania the night, too, together. I took him with me.
That was in Dallas?
No, I was here in SoFi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, great. So you left the house?
For that?
I picked him up.
Only special occasions, Rich. Only special occasions.
Okay.
Like coming to work every day.
Let's go to Christy in Detroit right here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Christy?
Hi, Rich. How are you?
I'm well. What's going on in your mind?
I am an absolute huge fan of you, also your wife and Amy's show. But I'm calling because I'm crazy excited about Ben Johnson coming back.
You should be.
This is so exciting. I got a text message from my ex-husband. All of these people are texting like, we're coming back. And I knew he was going to come back because we have a new name for Dan Campbell, and it is Daddy Dan. That's what we're all calling him here.
What are we calling him?
Daddy Dan.
Daddy
my
Dan.
Cousin, Yes. My cousin from Minneapolis sent me this TikTok video. Some girl, I don't know where she was from, and she's a fan someplace else, and she was like, Daddy Dan is getting it done. So, yeah, so that's our new nickname in Detroit for Dan Campbell. Us women, anyways, is Daddy
Dan. That's what I'm saying.
Daddy Dan. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if any guys
got Daddy Dan.
It.
And did I catch it correct?
I can't say it probably as well as I can. I get it, so okay. I'm not mad at it. But, yes. But it was funny because your screener was like, do you want to talk about the game that happened? I said, absolutely not. I couldn't listen to Sports Talk Radio today. I said I couldn't listen to it this morning. But as soon as he signed on, I turned your show on right away, and I was like, I got to call in.
Okay. So, yeah. So now hold on a second. Did I also catch correctly that you got a celebratory text from your ex? Did I hear that too?
Yes. Okay. My ex-husband is a Steelers fan, they signed their offensive coordinator today, so of course, he's not as happy as I am, to say the least.
Is that why he's your ex, Christy?
I'm sorry, say that one more time?
Is that why he's your ex, because he's a Steelers fan?
No, I can't be mad at that. He grew up over there, so it is what it is.
Okay.
But,
okay,
we're huge football fans, and we've been a fan of you guys for like ever and ever. We used to watch, we watched you from the first day you joined NFL Network, and you
thank you, Christy. Well, yeah, listen, don't be such a stranger. Don't just call when the news is so great. You know what I mean? Just call anytime.
The last time I called in, I was so excited to get through that your screener was like, "What do you want to talk about?" I'm like, I don't know. I didn't expect to get through because it was right after Michigan won the national championship. Because I'm also a huge Michigan fan too. Also, you should say happy birthday to Jalen Rose today. It's his birthday today.
How about that? Very good.
So yes, a little shout out to our local Detroit birthday boy. So yes, but I'm just a fan. So thank you for all that you do.
Thank you, guys, over on the show. We'll chat again soon. There's Christy in Detroit. It was a lot of fun chatting with her. I think TJ got a little too personal, but that's okay. That's okay.
She brought it up.
Oh, I know. Well, you didn't have to ask.
I did, kind of. You were thinking it.
No, I wasn't.
You were thinking it, weren't you?
I'm glad they're...
Don't rope America into this.
I'm glad they're on friendly terms.
Of course. It's wonderful.
I mean? That's great.
I know Feller and Brocklin were thinking it.
It's wonderful.
And by the way, just for anyone who calls and you get confused, like you don't know what to talk about when Adam asks you, just say Michigan.
No, don't say that because somebody might just say that to get through and then start talking about Ohio State.
Uh-oh.
You don't need that.
Well, we'll hit the dump button on them real quick.
No, it's okay. Hey, now.
Hey now.
Listen, by the way, Ben Johnson just crushed it. He just crushed it because if he turned down an opportunity to be a head coach in the NFL, and not just any spot, for the Washington Commanders in their first season under full, complete new ownership post Dan Snyder.
The Magic Johnson era.
The Magic Johnson era. And with the number two overall pick, which could be Jaden Daniels or Drake May. So you get to go and cap space galore. That's why I put the Washington Commanders in a spot of being one of the best jobs to be had right now, because everything's on the table about how they do it. It's all new. You're starting from scratch, but the scratch is really talented offensive players, some talented on defense. You have a fan base that is beyond excited because the worst owner in the history of the NFL potentially is gone. And you get the second overall pick, and you are a head coach there, and so you get some time. The honeymoon is going to last. And then you've got salary cap for days. And you say no to that, which means everyone in Detroit loves you even more. But if you went there and heard things you kind of didn't like and everything I just said that looks from the outside to be great and you found it isn't, or they decide we're going in another direction, you get a whiff of that and you're like, I want to win a Lombardi in Detroit. Put it out there. But he also told Seattle no. And he's coming out and saying, I want to go win a Lombardi, so he's not going to Seattle or Washington? I mean, this is great. This is just a great piece of news for Detroit, A. I mean, they got to get another year of this offense with the same play caller, who clearly knows what the hell he's doing. And B, you know, what a great way to start off your offseason, to turn the page from some really awful stuff that we saw in San Francisco. And then for Ben Johnson, it's a win-win. They love you in Detroit. And if you've already heard that neither of these teams want you, you're not rejected. You're, you know, what is that? What's that like? I you know, you break up with me. I already broke up with you. It's not you, it's me. I invented it's not you, it's me. So that's kind of a Costanza. He did the opposite, too, of what we all expected. Who's Washington going to go higher now?
I'm so conditioned.
Well, it looks like they're bringing in Aaron Glenn for a second interview.
Well, that could be. Well, I mean, they were supposed to bring both in for a second interview.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to get more reporting on Ben Johnson.
Every time I hear Ben Johnson, my mind just goes to the Olympian who raced Carl Lewis. So I've got to, like, condition
myself.
Yeah,
different one.
to think the other
different
Ben
one.
Johnson.
Different Ben Johnson.
Okay, so today is what anniversary, Chris? You mentioned this.
Today's the anniversary of the Rams. Titans, Kevin Dyson, tackled at the one.
Super Bowl,
yeah.
That was back in the day. Super Bowl 34.
Wow.
Super Bowl 58 is coming up almost a quarter century ago.
Wow.
That's
man.
Nutty.
I was a sophomore in college.
So that brings all of us to convene for another top five. Top five greatest Super Bowl finishes of all time. Hit it.
High five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Rich's top five.
All right, here we go. Give me some music and a top five list. Woo. Going down memory lane today. Unfortunately for Buffalo Bills, what was old was new again. Number five is wide right.
Oh, Rich.
I'm sorry. Super Bowl 25 in the old sombrero. And this was unbelievable. 20-19 New York football Giants. The Bills drove 8 plays in 61 yards. Thurman Thomas got most of them. He had 190 all-purpose yards on that night. He was spectacular to set up Scott Norwood from 47 yards away, his longest ever attempt on grass. And Frank Reich was holding. And Scott Norwood, as we all know, with 8 seconds left, shoves it right. First ever Super Bowl in which the winner and loser was going to be decided by a field goal. That one. And it turned out to be a Giants victory and Bill Parcells' final game as head coach of the New York Giants. Number five on that list. Number four on the list, Super Bowl 23. Joe Montana's classic final drive. An 11-play 92-yard, 2-minute and 46-second drive.
Wow.
The game's most valuable player, Jerry Rice, caught 3 of his 11 catches on this final drive that began with Montana huddling up and noticing that John Candy was in the crowd. And Harris Barton couldn't believe it. And he's like, what are you talking about? And Montana was Joe Cool. And Jerry Rice, the game's MVP, was a decoy on the 10-yarder to John Taylor to win the game. Charles Haley, with a sack of Boomer Esiason in the few seconds left, nailed the door shut. That finish, Super Bowl 23, was Bill Walsh's final game as head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. Number three on this list, Super Bowl 43. I was on the field coming down the elevator from the press box area where we were convened, the we being me, Marshall Faulk, Mariucci, Dion. We were all coming out of the elevator and then through the tunnel out on the field to do NFL game day final, the post game show on the field. We were walking out on the field to get ready for that. And Larry Fitzgerald was coming untouched up the middle of the field into the end zone that we were standing in. And we were like, what the hell just happened? Larry Fitzgerald scored his second touchdown of the fourth quarter, a 64-yarder with 2:37 to go to put the Cardinals up in a game in which, as we all know, a pick six ended the first half to put the Steelers up by 10 in this game with James Harrison. And that's when Big Ben went to work with Santonio Holmes. He caught a pass on third down to start the drive that was stalled, first and 20 on the Steelers' own 12. And then a couple plays later, a 13-yarder to Holmes set up a new fresh set of downs, from which a 40-yarder to Holmes set them up inside the red zone. And two plays later, Big Ben, buying a ton of time as only he can, throws a dart to the back right pylon. And there's still an argument in Arizona whether both feet were down. After further review, touchdown, Santonio Holmes wound up being the MVP. And Kurt Warner made a little bit of a go of it by trying to come back and win the game. And instead, it wound up being a Steelers Super Bowl 43 win. That's number three on the list. Number two on the list, Super Bowl 34. It is the anniversary of that moment where Kevin Dyson was tackled on the one-yard line by Mike Jones, just 3 feet short of a Lombardi, I guess one would say. It's possible they could have gone for two. I've got a story on that in a moment. But this was a wild finish as well. The Titans had just tied the game with 3:08 to go on an Al Del Greco field goal.
Al Del Greco.
Tying the game at 16. Ensuing kickoff. First snap, Kurt Warner found Isaac Bruce for 73 yards. Touchdown. Boom. The Rams went back up on top by 7. And then Steve McNair, may he rest in peace, had a 14-play drive. The 14th and final play of the drive was Dyson winding up 1 yard shy of the end zone. No one had ever scored a touchdown on the last play of regulation and still did not. That's number two on the list. Number one on the list is the Malcolm Butler interception. I've never seen a moment ever like the one towards the end of Super Bowl 49, where the entire crowd, one fan base was elated and another one was expecting defeat and crying, expecting defeat. The Seahawks fans were elated because Marshawn Lynch 1,000,000% was going to get the football and run beast mode into the end zone to beat Tom Brady and keep him winless in the Super Bowl, still since his third ever Super Bowl championship way back in his day, and keep their decade-long in New England Super Bowl drought continuing. And they were excited, ready to repeat as champions for the first time since the 03-04 Patriots, and the Patriots fans were expecting bitter defeat despite being up. And I've never seen one snap of the football make people switch emotions in my entire life when Malcolm Butler snagged an interception. The fact that the Seahawks were throwing it, the fact that somebody nobody had ever heard of caught it and ended the game, and the Patriots did win the Super Bowl. I've never seen a moment like it. The only one that's come close to it was in the World Series in Game 7 when it looked like the Yankees were about to win the World Series in Arizona, because in came in the 8th inning of Game 7 with a lead, Mariano Rivera struck out the side, and then in the 9th inning, everyone in Arizona was expecting this thing was over, and Yankee fans were elated, and everybody switched places in the end. But that 9th inning took more than just one snap of the football. Took longer than that. That's number one on this list. I've never seen anything like it in my entire life, and that's my time.
One more?
Okay.
All right, we'll get one more.
One more is the David Tyree catch. And I know it didn't end the game because Eli still had to find Plexico Burress in the end zone wide open, and he did. And there was still a little bit of time for Tom Brady and the Patriots to come back. But I've never seen anything like this either in my entire life. And it was a remarkable finish and a wild way for New England to lose its first game of the year and ruined the first ever perfect season. And Rodney Harrison, who may hear his name for the Hall in just a couple of Thursdays right now, on this play, and Tyree, who no one again had ever heard of, pretty much, how does he keep that ball pinned to his helmet? I will never, ever know. And that led to one of the most fantastic finishes in Super Bowl history right there. And just if you can take that music down, just a couple of nuggets before we get to Brian Baldinger, we'll go to break here. You can take the music down. So of these plays, 4 of the 5 called by Al Michaels. Mm. The only one that wasn't was the Joe Montana Classic final drive called by the great Dick Enberg. Al called the other four.
Wow.
Joe Buck called the David Tyree catch, as we all know as well. And then, just on this anniversary of the Titans almost scoring with no time left and having an opportunity to go for two and win, I was at the old ESPN boardwalk restaurant zone, whatever they want to call it, in Orlando, Florida, at Disney World the year before, watching Green Bay play Denver. And what ended up happening was, as you remember, Green Bay let Denver score to go up, so they had a chance to go and try and win the game or tie the game at the end. If you remember that Super Bowl, that Terrell Davis in San Diego, he strolls in because they didn't want to just let Shanahan burn the time and kick a bunny field goal and end it. They let TD score. And so they wound up getting the ball back. They didn't go down the field and have a scoring opportunity. But I was sitting there with Leonard Marshall, former Giant, who was out there to meet and greet people, and a coach who is from the NFL, who was sitting there, and we were asking the coach, hey, is it possible if Green Bay goes down the field and scores a touchdown that Mike Holmgren would go for two and win it rather than force overtime? And he looked at us like we had 15 heads. Are you dumb? Of course he's going to kick the extra point. Of course you play for overtime. This is the Super Bowl. You're not just going for a two-point conversion to win it with no time left. And so his name was Jeff Fisher of the Tennessee Titans. 1 year later, he's driving down the field on this day, all those years ago, and I'm at a Super Bowl party in New York City, and somebody's like, if the Titans score, would they go for two? And I'm like, I know for a fact they will kick the extra point. And they're like, how do you know? Told the story. And sure enough, we still, just like on that day in San Diego between Green Bay and Denver, we didn't find out. God, I love the Super Bowl and this sport. And that's my top five greatest Super Bowl moments list. Take a break. Brian Baldinger, when we come back.
Good list.
He's going to break down what we just saw and what we might see in a moment, as only he can.
On the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, co-hosts David Green and Rob Abasolo interview real estate investors and entrepreneurs about successes, failures, and hard-earned lessons. Joined by author Dave Meyer.
Who wrote a book?
I did write a book.
It seems like you're coming out with a book every 4 minutes.
You're one to talk. You've released 2 books this year. I've done half as many as you.
It is more about strategy than it is about just finding whatever the new buzzword happens to be.
Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning. Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather. Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
In New York, I'm Sue Aller.
I'm Charles Tillotesma.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
I'm Jennifer King.
I'm Clayton Neville.
I'm Kevin Carr.
I'm Archie Zaraletta.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
So, in the continuing Ben Johnson saga, Shefty saying the Commanders were in a flight to Detroit when they learned Ben Johnson was out. So this is not something, although Shefty says he wasn't a lock for the job anyway. So now you got to wonder, did the Lions just beat everyone to the punch and say, how much? Here's a blank check. Why don't you stay? Didn't... Jerry do that with Dan Quinn, apparently?
Yeah, was that 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Oh, last year, right? Wasn't it last year?
I think last year,
I thought it was the year before.
Yeah, but yeah, year before and last year. Feels like both years.
It's a huge step to become a head football coach. Maybe he didn't feel he was ready to run.
I don't know.
You know, that's a lot of responsibility.
Or you want to run it back. I mean, they're so close. The Lions are close.
And he's 37.
With cap space, I mean, go for it.
I don't know. Quinn last year, it would have been, he would have gotten a job, I think. And then now, maybe not. You know?
He's got unfinished business.
Does he?
I hope so.
What business?
Bring a sixth Lombardi trophy to the Dallas area.
To the Dallas Metroplex?
Yeah.
What happens? Did Dallas wins their sixth or Detroit wins their first?
What's more likely?
What happens first?
Keep that for Friday. Keep that under your hat. Keep that in your hat. Don't answer that question. I know exactly how I'm answering that.
Well, we all know how you're going to
answer. How am I going to answer that?
You're going to say Detroit wins
you
the first.
You have no idea how I'm going to answer.
I think I
how dare
do,
you? How dare you put words in my mouth?
I'll reserve judgment.
Settle down just a little bit.
I don't have the patience to jack around with you.
I think we all know. I think even Brian Baldinger knows how you're going to answer this.
No, Brian. Leave Brian out of it, just like leaving America out of it. What's the matter with you?
America's watching.
All right. Sorry, but let's get to Baldy.
So
we're
Baldy.
Too late for him. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. I love his breakdowns. I love being a colleague of his at the NFL Media Group. He's at NFL Films right now. He was at the AFC Championship game between the Chiefs and the Ravens. He is Brian Baldinger. Good to see you, Baldy.
Good afternoon, Rich. It's good to be with you. It's a great time of the year.
It sure is that. So, how did the Ravens only run the ball six times with running backs, Brian? What happened? What did you see? What have you seen since reviewing this game plan?
Well, Steve Spagnuolo, you know, he's done this before, some of his game plans. He went to a big linebacker core, Rich. He went with Leo Chenal, Nick Bolton, and Drew Tranquil. And they came out with that big linebacking core, and they said, we're just going to box you in. We're not going to give you running lanes. But we'll leave our corners one-on-one with OBJ and Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman. And if you can beat us, if the quarterback can beat us playing one-on-one coverage on the outside, then we'll give you those shots. And they couldn't do it. And I think it's because Lamar only had two designed runs, Rich. And so he's the best runner on the field by far. Like, it just seemed like and the score was never obviously greater than 17-7. Like, it just seemed like they forgot who they were during the course of that game.
So I guess, how does that happen? You know what I mean? Like, it's some point you still have to run the Gus bus, right? I mean, I know this is pure second guessing here, but.
Well, I mean, look, Gus's second run was 15 yards. Lamar's first run was the fourth and one where he split it for 21 yards. There were runs there. I mean, they've seen exactly what Kansas City did to them. They've seen it over the last 5 years. Teams are like, okay, let's just stack the box. And they still, I mean, Houston did some of that against them in the divisional championship round, and they ran for 220 yards. So, at some point, John Harbaugh has to step in and say, Todd Monken, that is, like, look, let's get back. Let's get back to just pounding it right here. Let's establish this. Now, one of the parts, though, Rich, that they had four series where they were three and out. So you're not sustaining any offense. And so you're not able to stay on the field to get the running game going when you're just intermittently just off the field so quickly.
And then the other aspect of the AFC Championship game is the latest example of the Chiefs flipping a switch on offense, certainly between Mahomes and Kelce. But the second half, they didn't have any points. So what did you see from any of the film breakdown of what the Ravens were able to affect that the Niners might be able to against this team?
Well, they went a little bigger up front. They blitzed more than they had in the first half. They made Mahomes hold the ball a little bit more. And so that was a big part of – and then they just played better. Their whole defense, I mean, it's really pretty simple. I remember – talking to Rod Woodson on Sunday morning about just what we can expect. And he's like, look, honestly, Baldy, this is a defense that just prides itself on playing harder than anybody else. And they just played harder. They got off blocks. They refused to stay blocks. They pursued better. They tackled the catch. And so I just thought they just played better in the second half. They didn't do a whole lot more differently than what they had done to get to the point where they were.
And why does Kelce, you'll be the latest, Brian, that I asked this question of, and I think you might even already know that where it's coming. Why does Kelce get so wide open all the time? How does this happen? What do you see?
Well, so they had, obviously he had 11 for 11. The ball didn't hit the ground, Rich. Seven of the 11 catches were no farther than 4 yards. I mean, Mahomes didn't have the ball. He didn't have the ball in his hands a second and a half. It was, I'm just going to go to the open stop. They have this thing. It's like Y stick is a route for a tight end. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, Kansas City calls it stash rash. So it's, they have versions of stash routes. You're in zone. There's a four-yard stop route, like on the first play of the game. We'll just get it to Kelsey. We'll get 4 yards. We'll stay on schedule. That was most of the plays now. On the opening drive, fourth and two, Rich, you run sprint right option. And if it's not there, Pat, you got Kelsey in the backside. He'll be one-on-one with the corner. Like, you take the shot. Well, he took the shot, and it was a perfect throw. The corners, Brandon Stevens, was right there, but Kelsey used his size, and Mahomes put it up on the rim. And then the touchdown against Kyle Hamilton is just one of those throws that we expect from Mahomes, but it's just one of those throws that you have to make in championship games to win those games. You can't throw it any better. And I don't know if you threw it 99 more times that you could throw it any better than what he did when he had to throw it. Because Hamilton was the perfect guy to cover him on that play. He just put it in a spot where he couldn't get to it.
Well, and you're a perfect guy to ask this question to, Brian Baldinger, watching as much ball as you do and playing ball as you did and being in the South Jersey, Philadelphia area for as long as you have been. How has Andy Reid changed? How has Andy Reid evolved to, as he is now rightfully taking the place as a first ballot Hall of Fame, all-time great play caller, up with the, I guess, what, Bill Walsh's of the world right now, Brian? So what honestly, have you seen?
Honestly, Rich, he's always evolved, but he has Mahomes now. He has the best player in the league, and they're just joined at the hip. There's a major respect that Patrick has for Coach Reid. They were getting to championship games here in Philadelphia year after year after year. They didn't have that level of player. They're not knocking Donovan McNabb, but they didn't have that level of player at that position back then to win some of those championship games or to win the Super Bowl against the Patriots. But, like, for example, when they got T.O., Rich, the offense changed that year. Donovan McNabb never had a better year. The offense went from being classic West Coast offense, short passes, long runs, to bombs away. Like, he changed in one off season when he got T.O. And so now you have this offense where you've got Travis Kelce. You've got an interior of the offensive line that's as good as anybody's in the league. You've got this running back that just is an amazing player and how he's able to break tackles and run so hard. And so he's built the offense around those two players. And now Rashee Rice, who Mahomes met when he was at SMU.
Yes.
And Mahomes lives in Dallas, and they met before the draft last year. And Mahomes is like, I'm throwing to this kid, coach, and he's pretty good. Like, he catches everything I throw to him. Like, maybe you should take a long look. You know, and he kind of put him on the radar. So Mahomes has something to do with it. But I think that's just the difference with Andy right now, is he's always had a great defensive coordinator. I mean, Jim Johnson, you go through the list of them. Now he's got Spags, maybe the best big-game defensive coordinator we've seen in this league and what he has accomplished. So he's always had a great staff. Now he's got the best player at the most important position in Mahomes, and that's how the evolution continues.
Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show with Brian Baldinger podcast, and, of course, the must-follow on social to break down film, and as only you can, Baldy. So walk me through your opinion of Brock Purdy.
Well, I don't understand any of the criticism, Rich. I really don't. I think the guy's just a silent assassin. He's so relaxed and he's so confident, yet he doesn't really relish any of the spotlight. I mean, he'll tell you, I'm just good at playing quarterback, but I'm a regular guy. The players love him, Rich. I remember his first game was last year. He came in for Garoppolo. He got hurt against the Dolphins, and he played pretty good in that game. And his first start was the following week against Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. And I remember talking to him and Debo and Kittle and the whole group. And they were like, Baldy, this kid, we knew he was good in training camp when he was carving us up as just the scout team quarterback. That guy sees the field as good as anybody in this whole business. His runs, he was channeling Steve Young the other day. I don't think we knew that he could do that in that stage against that defense with that speed that they have. And his movement is just elite. And then probably the best part about him is he plays with no fear. Yeah, he threw an interception in the first quarter. It kind of, you know, stopped a drive that they had going. It never sits in his mind that he's going to play with less fear after that. And so I think he's the perfect quarterback for Kyle right now in that he can program him. This is what I want. He can coach him hard. If he makes a mistake, he can get on him like he does during a week in practice. Yet he can take all of that and still go play without any sort of fear about making a mistake.
So the mistakes he makes are because of why. And I set that up by asking, because if you're going against Mahomes, you can't have somebody who's still growing in the position. You know what I mean? Like, you got to show up a grown-ass man. So, and if he is, by the way, that's totally understandable. I mean, and you, you as an undrafted player would completely understand somebody who almost was undrafted and how that can, you know, maybe affect the way you do something and you put a chip on a shoulder and what have you. But why is he making the mistakes he's making right now?
Well, because the offense is designed to attack the middle of the field. And there's just a lot of traffic in the middle of the field. You know, Josh Paschal tips his hand and he's trying to throw the ball in the middle of the field. It gets intercepted by Malcolm Rodriguez the other day. There's a lot of traffic. And he's layering these throws over the linebackers in front of the safeties. But yet he's hitting Debo in stride. And so that's where Kyle likes to design the offense. Garoppolo was good at it at times. Obviously, he wasn't good at times. But it's not safe throws. He's not throwing checkdowns to running backs. He's not throwing, like Tom Brady, deep down the field. Like, he's not throwing deep down the field outside the numbers. It's in the middle of the field. And so those are throws that can get a lot of quarterbacks in trouble. Brady could throw the ball to a running back 14 times in the Super Bowl. He'd be happy as hell. Well, they're not doing that. That's not the way the offense is designed. They're designed to attack with chunk plays the way Mike March did back in the day with Kurt. And that's where they want to go. And not everybody is built to make those throws.
So the scheme is built for dangerous throws. Like, there's
it
a
is
lot
built but, for but, dangerous.
So there's the risk, and then we could see, obviously, the reward. And
yes.
That's what you're saying?
I'm saying exactly that. And so a lot of it is off play action, but not all of it. Mm-hmm. But you watch their in cuts. Like, I remember talking to Jim Schwartz after they lost to Cleveland this year. And I talked to Jim about it. And he said, you know, like, we knew that they loved their in cuts, but we weren't getting out of our man-to-man coverage. We're going to stay. We're going to make the quarterback beat us. And that day he threw an interception. Martin Emerson picked one off. And they shut him down pretty good that day. They play without Debo. They play without Trent Williams. But nonetheless, they manned those receivers up, and they didn't have the big open spots in the middle of the field. They played really well. They took them away. But that's when I started. But Jim was like, this is where they want to go, Baldy. We knew it, and we could have played zone and protected ourselves, but we're like, the corners wanted to play man and man up against Ayuk and Kittle, and we were good with it, Juwan Jennings. And they won that day, and it remains to be seen what Spags is going to do. As much man coverage as he played the other day and as much talent as he has at the cornerback position, if he's going to play that style.
Yeah, Purdy led a game-winning drive, actually, in the fourth quarter. Had the Niners set up to win, but Jake Moody missed the field goal. So Purdy actually had that gritty final drive in that game that didn't result in the win that Niner fans were always talking about, the gritty win that they're looking for, and they did come up with one in Green Bay against Green Bay. So before I let you go, Baldy, your first blush analysis of Super Bowl 58 and what it will come down to. What do you have for me?
Well, I at this point, Rich, like, how can you bet against Patrick Mahomes? Like, how can you, honestly, like, that's the easy answer. But, like, how many times are we going to watch this movie and go, you can't count this guy out, even in the Super Bowl they lost to Tampa. Like, you couldn't have, I think somebody tracked how many miles he ran being chased, you know, that day, where the offensive line was just, you know, it was just overmatched. But, like, even still in some of those throws, like, nobody can survive and make those kind of efforts that he did to try to win that game. And so we know the effort and everything it takes to try to win a game, no matter where they're at in the game, up, down, whatever. Like, it's just hard to think that you could take down Patrick Mahomes and Steve Spagnuolo and Andy Reid at this point.
But give me the way that the Niners then do it. It comes down to what? I mean, can the Niners do to Mahomes what the Ravens defense did? Because if Mahomes has a scoreless half, Don't you think the Niners have a great shot with certainly with McCaffrey and a healthy Debo and Ayuk and Kittle and Purdy coming in and saying today's my day, right?
Well, we're gonna put the spotlight on Brock Purdy and see if he bites the apple, Rich, as they like to say, or if he just plays, you know, just loose and carefree and just fearless. Because at the end of the day, I remember like when Nick Foles won the Super Bowl with the Eagles here 6 years ago, Rich. Like I said, okay, before that game, he's got to make five throws that are just absolute highlight throws. And when you go back and watch that shootout with Brady, he had 10. He had 10 that day where you go, you can't throw it any better. And they needed every one of those 10 to win, including the Philly special. And I feel like that's what Purdy's going to have to do. We're going to have to see at the end of this thing, like we're going to see five throws where you go, I don't care if it was Montana or Young. He's on that stage with the guys that have won here before, and that's the level he's going to have to play at.
And maybe have a catch, too, like you pointed out that Foles had, right? I mean, who knows? Baldy, great chat. Really appreciate you doing it. I'll see you down down the road, and say hi to everybody there at Films.
I'll certainly do that, Rich. I'll see you in Las Vegas. Take care, buddy.
You bet. At the Sable Mahal, Brian Baldinger zooming into the Rich Eisen show here. Love Baldy, man. Just love the
– Love it.
His passion for ball talk comes through. I like it. Purdy's going to have to come up with five throws. So let's make a note of that.
Five.
Because we'll talk about, again, we interview and compile here. Five throws. We'll keep mentioning that to all our guests next week when we're in Vegas for our Super Bowl shows. And then watch Super Bowl 58 and see how many of he comes up with.
Now, when we mention these to the guests coming up, do we make it seem as though we came up with
this? I'll give him credit, a million percent.
And just make it seem like it's yours.
Yeah, no, as an example, the throw where he took one in the chops and found Debo.
Oh, yeah.
Another one where he escaped and found Juszczyk on the sideline.
Yeah, that was a good throw.
The touchdown to Ayuk.
Mm-hmm.
That's three.
Didn't he have another one to Juszczyk in the other side of the field on like a third down?
Oh, yes, where Juszczyk was open.
And he caught him on that one.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got a few of them right there. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back here on the Rich Eisen Show in just a lickety-split and set up the rest of our week right here on the show. Rockman just out of the blue. Where were you when you sent this tweet, Chris?
Oh, I mean, was that on a Sunday? Was it a Sunday night?
Don't remember.
I was probably just at home.
And you just said, you
watching
know what?
The games.
If the Eagles make the playoffs, I'll take
Might
a bite out
gym,
of Mike
myself.
Del Tufo's hat. You said, I will take a bite out of Mike Del Tufo's hat.
Yeah.
Eagles have made the playoffs, and you have avoided the inevitable for a week. That ends now. I just sliced up a 1-inch by 1-inch cutout of Mike Del Tufo's Callaway hat. And I placed it like little Easter eggs into the half of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yep.
Take a bite. Ugh, here we go. Here you go. Brockman is taking a bite. Did you get a piece of the hat there?
Oh,
I think you did.
Oh, yeah.
You're the one who chose the peanut butter, too.
Trash can nearby?
Nope. Nope. We don't.
It's part of the hat sticking out. I didn't get it off.
Oh, that is that is an awful piece right there in that,
like,
in that sandwich. No, you may not.
As long as you eat it.
Yeah. Keep going.
Ugh.
Keep going. I didn't go through.
Oh, man, this piece is like right on my tooth.
Why did you even do this, Chris? You didn't have to. You took the McLovin
bait. Because the Eagles stink.
You took
the McLovin bait.
Oh, my God.
That was Sunday.
Radio audience, I can't even tell if that's a piece of glistening jelly or a piece of a glistening jellied Del Tufo hat piece. Down it. I feel like I'm talking to Taylor eating her broccoli. Just eat it and we'll get off your case. Oh, he just went one bite. He finished it. This is not going to be good because that is peanut butter and it is jelly and it is Del Tufo hat. And you just jammed literally 3-inch by 3-inch piece of sandwich.
It was a proud day for my future son.
Oh, my God. All because you took Andrew Perloff's bait.
No,
Cowboys
back on the Rich Eisen Show. Game Time is the ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with any purchase that you make on it, because it's the fast and easy way to buy tickets for events near you, and like for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. But it's also because you can find last minute seats, and you can also find the view from your seats, and you can also get all in pricing up front, so you know what it costs before you check out. And now, all users can get $100 off when you buy a big game ticket with code VEGAS100. And the Game Time guarantee that you get by buying tickets with Game Time gives you the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time is going to credit you 110% of the difference. Again, the guesswork's completely removed out of buying tickets with Game Time. All Game Time users right now get $100 off a big game ticket with code VEGAS100. Restrictions apply. Visit GameTime.co for terms. Just download the Game Time app. Use the code VEGAS100 and you get $100 off a big game ticket. Or if you're not going to the game, just use my code RICH and you get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
You should do that.
I have been told, sir, you've got something for the final segment. What do you have?
Well, yeah, you know, today we were, Chris brought up earlier that today was the anniversary of the Kevin Dyson play.
Yes.
And, you know, on Facebook, you know, I check Facebook every now and then, and it always has a memories tab, and you go there and you can kind of see what you've posted throughout the years. So I happened to look today and I saw a post that was kind of interesting. I mean, you and I had spoke about it before, but from January the 30th, 2013. Just gave Rich Eisen a ride in the rain. Normally, I don't pick up hitchhikers, but I made an exception.
This was at the New Orleans Super Bowl.
This is the first, and you and I spoke about this the first time I met you. I gave you a ride in the rain. And then I also was on the DP show 11 years ago today where I portrayed a character called Dr. Voodoo.
Uh-huh.
The Danettes were trying to put a little heebie-jeebie on Dan for picking on him, so they had me come in. And
it was 11 years ago where there was a golf cart ride in the rain.
No, it was an Escalade. It was pouring rain, and so I gave you a ride from the set to wherever you had to be next, and that was the first time that...
How about that?
I mean, of course, I knew who you were. I've watched you for years, but that was the first time that you and I ever actually met.
Squad goals.
And I talked to you, right? I mean, we had a conversation.
You sat up front.
Well,
that wasn't an Uber either.
Well, the ride was about 100 feet because it was pouring rain.
No,
right?
I mean, I took you down the block a little bit.
Well, so. I mean, it was because I had to come through the convention center.
Yeah.
Right. I had to leave the convention center and I got picked up. And Dan had his own set.
Yeah. I had to tell.
That was a little ride away. And it was raining. It was pouring.
We were going to walk. And I told James Crittenden, I was like, you want me to give Rich a ride?
How about
that? Like, yeah. So
it sound like training day.
I would say your rating on that day would be like a 5. I would give you 5 stars on that.
All right.
You know,
thank you.
Unlike Uber, which
you would have given me 5 stars, even though I sat up front.
Well, I mean,
the Uber driver, with Uber DJ here,
DJ, don't do that.
DJ. Don't do it, right?
Uber's
ZJ.
But Uber TJ says, come on, right. Shaka. So, anyway, happy anniversary, Rich.
Thank you, same to you.
You guys.
And how about next year? The Super Bowl's in New Orleans, and you'll do more than just a cameo.
God willing,
yeah.
You know,
you'll be with us the whole time.
As long as you still have me, baby, I'll still be
okay.
Here, you know.
I will have you. Very good.
When's the logo come out? Because I need to know who's going to be playing in the
game.
I told you,
the logo for the New Orleans Super Bowl.
Like, let's go.
Will come out the next day at the handoff press conference. Whoever's in charge of
the
Super Bowl committee in New Orleans.
Super Bowl prediction.
Whoever is in charge of that committee in New Orleans will be in Vegas, and there will be a handoff between the Vegas Super Bowl committee and the New Orleans Super Bowl committee, and they will put out the logo for Super Bowl, hold on a minute, LXIX.
Look at you.
Right?
Because
I'm doing Roman numerals for you.
59.
The only Super Bowl where there were no Roman numerals, I believe, was Super Bowl 50. Because they didn't want just the letter L on a hat being handed out to winners.
Right. Loser.
That's funny.
I'm serious. You can't have Super Bowl L. So
can we predict the colors for next year?
I don't even know. It's a waste because this year
I'm
going to
tell you right now.
It's stupid.
I'm going to make a Super Bowl prediction on Overreaction Monday based on the colors.
I'm predicting
everybody right now,
Chris. I'm going to predict blue and red.
Man, we just had red.
I know, but we're going to have
red.
It's
red all the time.
We're going to have red,
red and green, and it's going to be blue. I mean, what else is it going to be?
It was yellow when the Bengals and Rams played. It was blue and
Saints colored,
orange and yellow.
Yeah, black and gold. Black says and gold. Don Bowie, who's like the Saints fan of our world.
Saint Super Bowl, Don Bowie is. I'm predicting the Cowboys-Chiefs Super Bowl. Let's go.
The Steelers.
Chiefs Saints. In it again?
I mean, are you going to bet? I know you don't bet, but are you going to bet against them? Like I said earlier, man, as long as Patrick Mahomes is still breathing.
Oh, you know, there'll be something prior to the season, this, that, the other thing during the season. Oh, the Chiefs are vulnerable.
Let's see.
Yeah, we're not
Drake
falling for
May
that banana
and the
in
Patriots
the
are going up against.
Nice. Nice. Drake May and the Patriots going up against who? Caleb Williams and the Bears?
That sounds great.
Okay.
Two rookie quarterbacks in the Super Bowl, Rich? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, gosh. Well, it all depends on the color scheme, apparently.
Yeah.
Morons. I'm surrounded by morons.
Red, orange, and silver? Oh, yeah. Let's go.
Okay. That'll wrap it up for this edition. Thanks to Baldy. Thanks to Albert Breer. Thanks to David Lombardi as well. And thanks to these morons.
Hey, I resemble that remark.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
And here's Lil Yachty with Tierra Whack.
I've never been to a fashion show. I never did any Paris Fashion Week, New York Fashion Week, and I'll tell you why. Because I would always go to events, and people would say to me, "Oh man, Yachty, man, I love your music, bro." And I should be like, "What song?" At the time, I didn't love my music. I would feel like I'm in a room with all these artists, and they all respect each other, and I feel like no one respects me.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.